Marine Resources Commission. The next item on the agenda is item 13. I'm sorry, item 12, public comments. That's an opportunity for those individuals in the audience to be heard on matters not on the agenda. Mr. James. Good afternoon, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Butler.
Pleasure.
Chairman Bowman, members of the commission, my name is Ellis W. James. I'm a lifelong resident of Norfolk, Virginia. At your place, you will find a story that was written in the Defenders of Wildlife magazine. And I took the time to make copies after contacting the company to be sure it was okay to copy it and disseminate it. If you recall, some of you, I believe, were on the commission several years ago when I made a presentation on the fact that we needed to really, really try to protect sharks. And in that presentation, I referenced the fact that cownose rays and their population had exploded because of the fact that we were taking way too many sharks, and especially since cownose rays are one of the delicacies that sharks enjoy eating. Little did I know, if you will look on page 20, the second page, for example, as a large shark species declined along the mid-Atlantic coast of the United States over the past 30 years, populations of smaller rays and skates that have been shark prey exploded. Today, cownose rays, which feed on shellfish, have decimated bay scallop harvest in Chesapeake Bay and coastal North Carolina and may make it harder for other species like clams and oysters to recover from pollution and over-harvesting where restoration efforts are underway. Boy, that sounds like home to me. I know that you will have the opportunity, in spite of the deluge of paperwork that you get all the time, that you will have the opportunity to look through this, and I think you may find it interesting. The essence of the writing of this young lady stresses the need to protect and conserve our shark populations. Specifically referenced in this story is the bull shark, one of the ones that we from time to time have encounters with in the mid-Atlantic and off of the coast of Carolina and Virginia. The statistics speak for themselves. Over the past 50 years, 25 people died from shark attacks throughout the coastal United States, while approximately 1,930 were killed by lightning strikes. It is pretty well established that sharks don't feed on people for the most part. There may be some who would claim an exception to that, but for the most part, the statistics bear that out. Some of the critical issues that we're confronted with that are reviewed in the story are the question of finning, which is one of the most deplorable things that we do on this planet, and that's saying something. That is partly a problem with cultural perceptions for many nations around the world. But activists who are trying to protect and conserve sharks are working on that aspect of it. I think in the end, for those of us who live on the East Coast, we have a perfect example right here in our backyard as to why we need to conserve and protect the great sharks. And I thought maybe this article would be of interest to each member. And that's why I took the time to provide it. I don't pretend to be a scientist or an expert on sharks, but I've been swimming in the Atlantic for almost 72 years, And I promise you that on occasions when my wife and I swim in the evening, we have encountered the presence of a shark. Because the early morning, and I'm sure as Mr. Bowden knows, early morning and evening is when they do a lot of their feeding. And so we are, although we love to swim in the evening, we are very, very cautious. And we pay attention. And on occasions over the years, we have encountered that situation. My wife and I never swim together going in the same direction. We always swim. I'm looking over her shoulder and she's looking over mine. I appreciate you taking a few minutes to listen to me talk about one of my pet concerns. The protection of the sharks is not an issue of hammering our fishermen or even the commercial fishermen. But bycatch is a serious problem, which is covered well covered in the article. And I know that catch and release is, of course, what most advocates for protecting the shark populations advocate. There are some problems. There are even a lot of fishermen commercially who accidentally hook sharks. And ironically, as I have learned, one of the great problems when they do, the sharks actually create all kinds of problems for them in terms of gear and destruction of the fish that they have on the long lines that they use with the hooks and so on. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. James. Mr. Bowden?
Mr. James, I do know a lot about sharks. And, you know, I'd be more than glad to discuss it with you at any time. Some of this stuff is less than accurate. We have no finning price. There is no finning in the United States, or very little, if any. I know of no one who fins sharks. The sharks in the United States are utilized, the whole thing. All this stuff you see on television and read this, if you would look the origin of the boats, most of them are Taiwanese and places. They're the ones that do it. You know, you would find it very hard to make a living in the United States with fins. The meat, high quality meat, is very, very pricey. You know, we'll get $1 a pound for meat now, which is better than most fish species we catch. We all hate finning. I mean, you know, it's just a total waste. I'm never going to disagree with anybody that feels that way, because it's absolutely horrible that it happens. But a resource that is wisely managed should be able to proceed. You know, a lot of the shark species are not in trouble. Some of them are stated to be in much worse trouble than they actually are. But I will say this. A lot of the populations are way down. Most of the populations that are way down are the long-lived species. That, you know, that's where you had the finning in the United States at one time, was the offshore long-lived species. I don't think we've ever had that problem in the state of Virginia. And, you know, and some of this stuff is heartfelt. There's no doubt. But it may not be totally accurate. And I'd be more than glad anytime you want to discuss shark. I can tell you a lot about sharks. I can tell you a lot about the practice of commercial shark fishing. I'd certainly be another source of information besides just this article. And I think you're one of those people who would like to know.
Right, and Mr. Bowden, that's the purpose of my calling this to your attention, to everyone's attention, is just to add to the knowledge that we have. And it's not a question of trying to say that this article is accurate in every sentence and so on. But I think one of the things that is alarming is the fact that on the East Coast, we have lost the big sharks about 99%. And if those figures, even if those figures are off and it's only 75%, that raises some real concerns in my mind. And that's why I wanted to bring it to
some species like the large hammerheads, numbers are down considerably. Yeah. I don't believe nowhere near that number. Some species, like a black tip, are at a all-time high. There have never been as many black tips as it is right now on the East Coast. Now, whether it's because the water's warmed and they're going further north, I can't explain why. But there was no presence of black tips when I was younger, and now they're very, very abundant. So, I mean, there is success stories and there is horror stories. It's both. And that's the reason I say I would really like to have the opportunity to talk to you about it sometime.
That's most welcome.
Good deal.
Thank you, Mr. Bowden.
Mr. Fox, do you have a comment?
I have one more comment. One of the first things I do when I see an article like this that's pushing a point of view is see what the credentials are of the author. And in this case, she's a freelance writer. And freelance writers generally write whatever pays them money. And where she may be telling the complete truth, one has to question whether she's qualified to comment on the life history of a shark. And so I haven't read the article.
I hope that you will reserve that judgment. I believe this young lady is eminently qualified to write about it, and you will find in the story, and the reason I was struck by it, was that she gives a very, very balanced view. This is not an agenda-driven story. This was out of concern for what the statistics are saying about the populations and the dramatic drop in the populations for a species that is necessary for the good health of the Chesapeake Bay and the East Coast, among other things.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, sir. Have a good day, and we appreciate your comments. Anyone else here wish to be heard? Public comments? Yes, sir. And then, Ms. Robbins.
Commissioner Bowman, Commission. My name is Todd Farrington. I'm here to make two requests. And they're both market-friendly requests for the crab industry. The first request is that you, as the commission, change the time in September from changing to 6 to 2 to stay 5 to 1 because of the heat stress that the crabs are going through. We've been dealing with it for 2 months now, and every market from the crab house to the bushel market house or retails would benefit from that change.
Okay.
So I'm asking that you would maybe advertise this month for next month's meeting to change September's time to stay 5 to 1 instead of going to 6 to 2.
Jack, comment, issues?
I don't have any objection to advertising that, but I don't have a sense at this point
of the popularity across the board.
Yeah, whether this is something that's widely supported or not.
When's crab management?
It does make sense. I mean, we've had a hot summer in that regard. But again, what other people are thinking on this, I don't know.
Can we vet it between now and then, as far as?
If you want to take action and have something in place by September, you'd have to vote on it at the next meeting, which means you'd have to advertise it prior to that. We can certainly, if you will allow us, we could certainly call around the industry members. Well, we could call members of the advisory committee and get a feel for what they want, and if everybody thinks it's a good idea, we could proceed to advertise.
Ms. Robbins?
I was just going to suggest that you, if you want to advertise it, that you poll the industry, both the processors and the harvesters, and see what sort of response you get before us taking action as a commission. But I don't think we have time. I don't know that we necessarily need to go through a committee review, but at least some sort of informal polling of the industry, if staff can do that.
I guess. And then we would proceed to advertise, bring it back to you next month, August, and let you know what we found out, and then you could vote one way or the other. If the committee's not in agreement, you could turn it down.
Fair enough. Okay. Let's go that route. What else do you have, Tom?
That's fair. I mean, every crabber I've talked to is in favor of it. Mr. Bowden, I'm sure, would see why or know why as fishermen. The other request is that in the next year, we reevaluate our timetable for crabbing. You get the Blue Crab Committee and y'all together as a commission to reevaluate, to be more market friendly. I mean, you got a permit for people who get medical excuses to start at 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning and be in early. That's friendly to the crabber, but it's not friendly to the market or the crab, which the crab's going to die anyway. It's going to get cooked. But, you know, there should be a enforceable, you know, not inexpensive way to get another permitted way to let crabbers start earlier in the peak heat of the summer so they can get in earlier with their catch and still be regulated, enforceable, you know. And it's, you know, it can be discussed. Mr. Robbins and the committee can do that. But it really needs to be looked into because, you know, if this global warming is true, it's going to be a factor for the rest of our lives. And something needs we need to address. So that's all I have. Thank you.
Good enough. Thank you.
Do we need to have a vote on the conditional call for public hearing?
We need to. Jack, was your idea to poll first and then get an idea before you advertised, or go ahead and we're going to need to chair will entertain a motion to advertise for public hearing. Mr. Fox?
So moved.
Motion made by Mr. Fox is our second. Second by Mr. Tankard. Further discussion? All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, motion carries unanimously. Anyone else wish to be heard on matters of public comment? Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I received a letter. I was copied on a letter this morning to. It was also sent to Jack Travelstead, and this is from Spot's Fish Company, Spot McDonald at Virginia Beach. And this relates to the existing harbor porpoise rule that imposes gillnet restrictions in the area from, specifically in the area from the Colregs demarcation line to the Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel. And as it turns out, the regulation has had a major impact on the striped bass fishery in the Lynn Haven area and is affecting the viability of that that fishery. And so in his letter, he points out that for a significant amount of time, there were observed trips that occurred in that specific area without any observed interactions with bottlenose, with harbor porpoises, and has requested that the commission work with the National Marine Fisheries Service to review the fishery in that specific area. And I would just ask if we could have staff review the information, the existing observer data. I think they already have familiarity with that more than I do at this point. But if they could review some of that information, and if in fact that's accurate, that interactions were either nil or close to that, they seek to initiate a dialogue with the regional office of the National Marine Fisheries Service on that issue. But Jack, I think, has a copy of the letter as well, so I don't know if Jack could comment on the issue.
Mr. Travelstead?
It's something we can certainly look into. I know staff's already started. I gave them the letter this morning, and they're already pulling their databases up. And if you wanted to see any of that today, we can certainly show it to you. But we can hold off and do that. And I think the simplest way to get this thing going would be a letter from the commissioner to the regional office asking for a review. And after we look at the data, we'll be able to perhaps put some things in that letter.
Plus, we've got ASMFC coming up where we can set the table and tell them to just have some dialogue there as well with them. Mm-hmm. Fair enough?
Thank you very
Good
much.
Good enough. My pleasure. Anyone else? Thank you all very much.